Sklink. You hear Elise Sunday mornings, among other times and places, on WGN Radio with Tom Fortino. That's at 7 a.m. on a little show we call This Week in Wealth. Hi, Elise. You're on the road today, huh?
I am. I'm down in Phoenix, where it's 82 degrees.
Yeah. It's snowing here.
Well, perhaps it'll melt soon.
Yeah, it's cooler than is normal. You're down there for the real estate editors meeting or something like that, huh? What's the news there?
It's interesting. One of the topics, which is something that I've been covering in my syndicated column for the last couple of years, is how this growing fascination that we have with electric vehicles will actually mesh with the fact that most of the apartment, condo, co-op, even townhome developments that we live in can't technically accommodate the growing consumption of electricity and the space for people who want to charge. And it's becoming a real issue because this year they're expecting 14 million electric vehicles to be sold just in 2023, and that's a 35% increase kind of year over year. So it's becoming a real issue.
It's interesting because the business of getting people to come back downtown, either to work or live, is such a relevant topic and so competitive. You would think that that would be job one. I mean, put it this way, whatever the customer wants, the customer is right. What is the problem here?
So there's a number of problems, and they are kind of what we call structural real estate problems. So I was listening to a really interesting conversation between a guy named Jim Herlis, who is the EV real estate leader for CBRE. They are the largest commercial real estate services company, and a couple of other people who are in the green energy space. And one of the issues is that older buildings, so buildings built before the last, let's say, 3 to 5 years, right? So almost all of the buildings in downtown Chicago.
Yeah, sure.
Literally can't get enough electricity into them, right, from the substation. The substation either doesn't have it to give or they can't accommodate the influx of electricity needed to charge up very many electric vehicles. So that's one issue. Another issue is that actually getting the charging stations installed is a problem because whatever electrical conduits they have in there aren't in the right places, in the garages where you can easily get the plug-in and the chargers kind of connected and organized. And then there's the question of in a condo or a co-op or anywhere where you have a congregate parking situation, who gets to charge up and when? And yeah. Do you charge people for it or do you not? And so there's a number of issues that they're trying to sort out.
Did they talk about the water crisis out there? And I know that's a regional, maybe real estate concern, but did that come up?
It did come up. It's very interesting. So, of course, Phoenix, recently, the greater Phoenix metropolitan area, and I should say it's coming from the state of Arizona, basically said no more new development in Phoenix unless you can prove you've got a 100-year solution for water.
Really?
And, I mean, 100 years. And this in the face of dramatic cutbacks because the Colorado River has been depressed. There was quite a bit of rain that came in, so one of the reservoirs got a little bit filled up. But this is a very serious problem in the entire Southwest. And, in fact, the New York Times did a very interesting map last year where they showed that the west of the Mississippi, so the western half of the U.S., is really drying out, top to bottom, whereas the eastern half is getting wetter and wetter.
The cooperative agreement that they were able to forge, we don't have a lot of time to go into this now. We got to take a break. But California, Arizona, maybe Colorado, New Mexico, those states all did come up with a stopgap plan to sort of, at least for a couple of years, manage the water. But that issue is not going to go away. I think the Great Lakes region is the place to own a house. And I'm kind of not kidding, Elise.
I couldn't agree more, John. We have plenty of water, and it's going to be our saving grace here.
So Netflix is now saying they're going to crack down on people that are illegally sharing their usernames and passwords. What's happened then to Netflix and their accounts? Are people dropping off? What's going on there, Elise?
Well, I think everybody's been just a bit surprised as perhaps how many people were sharing passwords and what happened to those passwords. So what's happened since Netflix started to crack this down in late May, so about, 10 days ago, they have rolled it out, and the average daily signups have zoomed. So the average daily signups for new accounts since they started this, your Netflix account is for you and only the people you live with in your household, 73,000 new subscribers, over 100% increase from the prior average. And they've had 2 days, John, in the last 10, where new subscribers surpassed 100,000 signups.
And that 73,000 is people signing up per day, right?
Correct. Average daily signups. It is a phenomenal number, and it should really boost whatever is going on with their revenue. It should really boost that.
Well, God bless them. So what is the moral of that story? I mean, were you surprised that that many people? Because I heard people saying, screw it then. I'm done with Netflix. What are you thinking about this?
Well, I think that, you know, if you're paying for your account, it's your account. And what they're trying to do is stop you from sharing your password, you know, with 20 or 30 other people. So what is a household, right? Does it include your children who are at college? Or perhaps away at camp? Does it include, you know, you and your spouse and one of you goes on the road? How are they going to know that you watching it on the road isn't the same as being at home? But it seems to have been enough to really get people moving and fess up, and maybe perhaps it's unrelated people who are now signing up for those accounts.
Hmm. Talk to me about quiet luxury.
Well, this is sort of interesting. Did you watch Succession?
Yep.
So one of the things that we've been hearing a lot about is what they were wearing in Succession. Now, I looked at it, and it's like, oh, they're very conservatively dressed. They look like every other very, very wealthy person, you know, with the cashmere and the no labels and things like that. Things that we know that people in TV production, you know, don't do because then they have to pay royalties. But in the real world, people who have those kinds of means tend to not like to support other brands. And so they wear quiet, muted tones, and it's now called stealth wealth or quiet luxury. And so after years of having our handbags and shoe buckles scream whatever logo we're wearing, we're now starting to see this trend of quiet luxury catch on, even as people are still living, and more people are living paycheck to paycheck than ever before in this country. So there's this real dichotomy of what you have and what you don't have and what you're showing and what you don't.
Yeah, it was kind of fascinating on Succession to see everything, the cars they drove, the clothes they wore, the purses they carried, the homes they lived in, et cetera. And you're right, it was very muted. There was nothing flashy. In fact, Ronnie, at the end, I think one of his last scenes, he was wearing a shirt from Walmart, like a children's large T-shirt, you know, with a pattern on it. But it was one you could get online for like $14. So that wasn't fabulously expensive, but we did notice it. Meanwhile, Tom had a watch on that cost $235,000. And Kendall's hat, the just sort of plain black and brown, it looked like maybe leather baseball cap that he was wearing, cost $650.
Yeah, it's you know, this quiet luxury trend is sort of interesting, right? You want to show off your wealth to the people who appreciate it and understand it, and you don't want to show it in the face or fly to the face of people who don't and can't. And so the thinking behind this is, you know what something's worth, you know who shops at Laura Piana, you know what these different things look like, and you don't need a brand to tell you. And I think that that's really what quiet luxury is all about. But of course, it'll be the next trend that we see everywhere, right?
Well, and I suppose too then, I wonder if the other manufacturers will come out with their own faux quiet wealth you know, looks. So it won't display a label, and it'll be a muted soft tone. And instead of, you know, $1,000, it'll cost $89. And I'll bet that's the next wrinkle.
I'm sure it already is. You know, one of the things that's pretty interesting about design trends today is that within a few weeks, literally less than a month, you can have a new design come out or a new trend start, and you can get it copied and made in Asia, different parts of Southeast Asia, or even China, and then back to the U.S. on the shelves or online to be sold just literally within a couple of weeks. And that's really, you know, we heard a lot about this about 10, 15 years ago, but it does cause sort of the higher-end brands a little bit of an issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any last observations for you, either from your travels and what's happening at that real estate editors convention in Phoenix or anything else on your mind?
Yeah, I just to say, we'll go back to the electric vehicles. I think that, you know, if you have an electric vehicle or you think you're going to be purchasing one and you're going to be out looking for a place to live, it's one thing to build this into a single family garage, right? You've got a garage and for $2,000 or $3,000, you can build in your EV charger. But if you are moving into some sort of, you know, congregate living arrangement, whether you're in a condo or a co-op building or a townhouse development, somewhere where there's parking in a group, but there's no assigned spots, really think about this ahead of time, because it can cause a bit of problem if you can't get a hold of a charger when you really need it.
How about it? That's Elise Link, Sunday mornings, among other times, here at WGN Radio, 7 a.m. on This Week in Wealth, and always at thinkglink.com. Elise, we'll talk to you next Monday.
Sounds good, John.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hey, John. Doing great. How are you doing?
You're good. You're the national editor at American Inno. ChicagoInno.com is the website. And the thing that just distracted me a little bit, as much as we talk about the business climate in Chicago, and what are we going to do to get businesses to come or keep them? I'm sometimes amazed at how interesting some of the businesses are that are in the city and the money behind them and just how like high tech it can be, right? Like you'd think that would either be Silicon Valley or nobody wants to do this sort of thing in Chicago. I'm thinking about one of the stories you guys had about a high temperature resistant battery that is being, do I remember this correctly, developed in Chicago. Can you talk about that, Jim?
That's right, yeah. So this company is called Nanograph, and they're a battery tech startup in Chicago. Been around for several years now, and really what they've been working on is really kind of improving battery technology in a way that really kind of hasn't been done before. And they're sort of specifically targeting U.S. military. So they recently just got a grant from the Department of Defense to build better batteries for the U.S. Army. And specifically, they're doing that in a couple of ways. One is for extreme temperature. So they're building a battery that, you know, right now can operate down to about minus 22 degrees Fahrenheit. What they really want to do, though, is kind of use this funding to continue to improve that and get that down to about minus 76 degrees Fahrenheit. So really operating in some extreme temperatures and kind of creating batteries that can last longer for our armed forces. What they're doing also is kind of creating batteries that can, you know, for lack of a better word, take a punch. And so these are batteries that, you know, after a collision, after a big event, you know, these batteries will not get damaged and will continue to work. And so, you know, oftentimes, of course, our military personnel have to carry very large batteries, as much as 25 pounds. And, you know, these batteries certainly weigh them down. We need them to work in all different kinds of conditions. So this is just the latest tranche of funding for Nanograph. They've been backed by different grants from the Department of Defense before. Recently, earlier this year, they raised about $65 million in a new funding round for their battery tech startup. So yeah, Nanograph is a great example of just what you were mentioning, kind of an under the radar startup that you wouldn't know operates in Chicago, but it's growing fast.
I want to do tours. I want you to organize a tour of a lot of these companies. And I don't know if they're all over by the Merchandise Mart or if they're scattered throughout the suburbs, but I'd like to do a tour of them.
I think that's a great idea. Really kind of getting into some of these offices, when pre-COVID, right, we had a lot of different clusters of spaces, whether it was 1871 and the Merchandise Mart for sort of software startups. You know, we had different clusters like Matter for healthcare, which is a healthcare incubator. I think these places still exist, but, you know, everybody's return to office is a little bit different. And, you know, it's a little bit more disjointed perhaps than it was before. But I do think it's a great opportunity to get in front of a lot of these emerging startups.
Right. So the tour will be, we'll go to this place at the Merchandise Mart. There'll be a bunch of empty desks and they'll go, well, they're all at home. So that wouldn't be so cool. But I'd like to meet the people, shake their hands, have them do a little presentation, see the battery, then go someplace else and see some microchip or whatever else is being developed, because you never hear about these. And by the way, about that battery company, you think there's probably some commercial applications for what they're doing for the Department of Defense, right? I mean, down the road, I'd like a battery that started when it was 70 below.
That's exactly right. And it's, you know, they're not just working with the Department of Defense. They've also had some contracts with auto manufacturers as well. So you can certainly imagine that they're going to have, you know, plenty of commercial capabilities here, especially, you know, with cars going to batteries here. So there's lots of commercial applications, but certainly they've hit their stride here with the DOD.
Of course, if you want to make your mark now, it's probably all AI, right? Do you have news along those lines these days?
Yeah, you know, in a recent piece, took a look at the startups that are valued at $1 billion across North America right now. So these are quote-unquote unicorn startups. And for better or worse, we kind of evaluate the state of the startup ecosystems by, hey, who are the companies that are getting this billion-dollar valuation and raising lots of funding? And so took a look at the last companies to reach this billion-dollar mark. Since the beginning of the year, we've seen 20 startups reach $1 billion valuation, 20 so-called unicorns. Half of those have been AI startups. So AI really making up the bulk of companies that are raising these massive funding rounds and getting these high valuations. And we found that generative AI startups, this is a sect of AI that creates text, visuals, other kind of content, just from a simple text prompts. These startups are reaching billion-dollar valuations twice as fast as other startups. So about every startup that reaches $1 billion valuation takes about 7 years to get to that point. Generative AI startups are reaching that in just about 3.5 years. So they're getting a lot of funding very, very quickly. And so, yeah, what we really found here is that, you know, despite the extreme drop off in number of new unicorn startups, so there were just 7 last month. Compare that to, you know, middle of 2021, we were seeing 30 companies reach $1 billion valuation per month. So it's really, really dropped off. But AI seems to be really kind of continuing to keep the unicorn herd alive.
University of Chicago had a startup competition, right?
Yeah, so the university competitions, we are in full swing right now in university pitch competitions in Chicago. You know, the university pitch competitions at the University of Chicago, for example, have created some of really the most well-known tech startups in town. You can think Grubhub, you can think Simple Mills, Tovala, Foxtrot. These are companies that are really kind of become well-known brands across the country. And they started out of these university pitch competitions. And so the latest company out of UChicago just won the top prize at its annual competition. This company is called Allnare. This is a startup that's working on a better way to approach difficult-to-treat cancers. And so it's a preclinical stage oncology company at the moment, but just received the first place at the University of Chicago's pitch competition, $585,000 for winning first place there. So a really big tranche of funding for them. Over at the University of Northwestern University, a company called Q the Curves just won its annual pitch competition. This is a social shopping app for plus-size fashion. So really an interesting fashion startup there at Northwestern that just got its first place prize.
Q the Curves, an online plus-size shopping platform?
That's right. And so really, you know, kind of its element there is the social aspect too. So really bringing folks together in one place where you can kind of share tips and share places to look. And obviously so much of the fashion industry is just really not tailored to plus-size folks. And so what they've been able to do is kind of create this, you know, online shopping platform where, you know, it's not just where to find clothes, but it's really that social element as well. So, you know, they've really found an interesting niche here and, you know, just took home first place in $160,000 from Northwestern University.
I understand the allure of a thinner person, but since most of us aren't, and if I wanted to make money, I would make an online platform or a brand that catered to people who are a size 14 or who are, you know, 46 jackets. I mean, that's where the population is. So I'm surprised there isn't more of this. I'm glad there is. Cue the curves. Okay. Well, we're out of time. I've got a lot of great ideas for you today, Mr. Dahlke. I want you to get on all of that, okay?
You got it, John.
We'll talk next week. That's Jim Dahlke. He is the national editor at American Inno. More business news today with Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Lincolnshire-based Camping World Holdings says it's ready to acquire Funtime RV in Oregon. Funtime sells Forest River RV and Keystone RV products. The deal's expected to close in the third quarter of this year. Camping World Holdings is the world's largest RV retailer, also selling related products and services. General Motors plans to sink over $600 million into its Fort Wayne, Indiana plant for production of its next-generation full-size pickup trucks. The investment will support tooling and equipment for production of the Chevy Silverado and GMC Sierra 1500 models. Gas prices are up around Chicago. Gas Buddy says average prices have gone up 16 cents a gallon in the last week, now standing at $4.32 a gallon. That's a little less than a dollar above the national average. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
With the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And last week, the world remembered D-Day.
A landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force.
June 6th, 1944, General Dwight D. Eisenhower making the announcement, and we'll talk about how American farmers did their part after I tell you we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Heavy firing now just behind us. An anti-aircraft burst in the sky.
And last week was the 79th anniversary of the largest amphibious assault in history. 155,000 troops landing on the beaches of Normandy.
And bombs bursting on the shore.
Troops who had an edge not only in weapons, but in food and nutrition.
Ready to do whatever was needed because they were well fed.
USDA historian Ann Efland says the entire war effort was aided by farmers. In fact, 2.5 years before D-Day, right after Pearl Harbor, President Roosevelt told American farmers,
"You have a most grave responsibility to the nation now and for the duration of this war."
While farmers were exempted from the draft in 1942, many had already been drafted and many more enlisted. Agricultural employment dropped by 1 million during the war.
So there were efforts to mobilize women, to mobilize high school boys and girls to work on the farms.
And it wasn't just a shortage of labor.
There were restrictions on use of rubber and steel, which affected use of farm machinery.
And historian Efflin says farmers were told to grow things better suited for wartime.
Oil seed crops, for example, that could be good livestock feed and provide oil, which could be used for industrial purposes to overcome some of our shortage of oil.
All of the efforts, especially what farmers did, allowed President Roosevelt to declare,
"There is enough food today for all of us, and enough left over to send to those who are fighting with us."
And it made our troops
ready to fight.
Very heavy fire now off our stern.
Yeah, 4,000 miles from the beaches of Normandy, Illinois farmers were doing their part. From the farm to your belly, today's National Jerky Day, and there's a connection to D-Day for this one, too. Beef jerky proved immensely valuable and was included in sea rations for American troops. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the business of food on 720 WGN.
There's a new, it sounds like, gaming business in Chicago that you go and do. You don't do this from a laptop at home. Bryce Anderson's going to tell us about that. He's the owner of Activate Games. Hey, Bryce, you're on WGN. How are you?
Hey, John. How are you doing?
Good. You have a location in Oak Brook. It's been open for a little while. What do we do when we go there?
Yeah, so we like to say that Activate is a new way to play for both adults and children. And so it's a team-based physical arcade. So it's not VR. It's not a video game. But it fuses the best of video games and sports. So when you come to Activate, you get a wristband, an RFID wristband, and you'll create a player profile that you'll assign to that wristband. And then for 75 minutes, you get to choose your own adventure between hundreds of different games, each game lasting 1 to 3 minutes. And so you're going to, if you beat a game, you can get to the next level and play the next level game. You can win rewards. So it's like you're entering inside a video game, but it's all physical. And so it's a put your phones down, engage with your friends and family in a physical, fun way.
So am I competing against them, or am I forming a team with my son? What do we do?
Yeah, so you will. You can do it both ways, but most people do a team-based thing where, say, 3 to 5 people come together to beat the game in terms of time and lives. So you'll have 1 to 3 minutes to beat the game. If you beat the game, all 5 of the people on your team win the same amount of points.
Got
but
it.
If you want to do head-to-head, you can also compete against each other.
Is it a little maybe conceptually like Survivor, where sometimes it's physical, but you've also got to be thinking on your feet, maybe putting together a puzzle? Does it have that feel?
You know, it does. I'd say a very high-tech Survivor. So one of the games is our Mega Grid game, and it has over 500 LED touch-sensitive tiles. And so you're having to jump on the green, avoid the red tiles, hit the blue buttons on the wall. If you touch on the red, you'll lose a life. And so that's one of our games, kind of a floor is lava type game. But some of them are more, so it's a really fun one. That's our most popular that some people have seen on TikTok. Another game is a little more cerebral, like the Survivor games, and you're having to solve these puzzles that are on the wall, and we'll have over 600 different buttons on the wall, and you're trying to find the patterns in the buttons, and that one's more like Survivor.
There's a memory game in there too, right? Is that the same one you just described?
Exactly. Yeah, we have a game where you're throwing these balls against touch-sensitive tiles on the wall, and just like the memory game as a kid where you're flipping over the two tiles and you're trying to find the two animals that match or something, you're hitting these touch-sensitive wall tiles, and it'll reveal a pattern. So you're trying to find the same pattern, match those up, to remove them off the grid, and you have to find all the patterns before your minute runs out.
Sounds like
so there's 500 different games and levels that you can choose from.
Sounds like a good corporate thing too, doesn't it? Or some sort of team building exercise?
Yeah, we do a lot of team building, especially during the days, and we do a lot of birthday parties. Our Saturdays are probably booked up for the next month with birthday parties, both kid birthday parties, but also adults. What's kind of fun, my favorite thing to see is when I see grandparents, parents, and kids, 3 generations playing in the same game. Each of them brings something unique to the experience. I just don't think there's a lot of things that bring people together away from your phones, away from your screens, and build relationships like that.
They're in Oak Brook. They're in 4 other states as well. I'm glad you've come here. Activate Games is the name of the business. Activate.com is, or activate.games is the website. Do I make reservations online? Any advice for us, Bryce?
Yes, you can make reservations online, and it's $24.99 per person for 75 minutes of play. And so you can make reservations online, or you can walk in. For weekends especially, I would recommend booking online so you can get the slot that you want. Especially on nights and weekends, we've been pretty busy, so I would suggest looking on our website to find an open spot.
Bryce Anderson's the owner of Activate Games, activate.games/Chicago. Good luck, Bryce. Thanks for your thoughts today.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.